Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is kvass? Five years ago, Jeffrey Yaskowitz and Liz Alpern were friends in their 20s who missed the delicious Ashkenazi cooking that they had grown up with. They realized that traditional Jewish delis were closing, grandmothers were getting too old to cook, and that Ashkenazi cuisine was perceived as a thing of the past, if perceived as a cuisine at all. They felt that gefilte fish packaged inside a glass jar on the supermarket shelf had become the symbol of all that had gone wrong with Ashkenazi cuisine, and decided to do something about it. After much research, they began to produce and sell a gourmet gefilte fish, and then branched out and began to cook other classic Jewish foods. They've recently published a book, The Gefilte Manifesto, New Recipes for Old World Jewish Foods, which contains over 100 recipes for traditional Ashkenazi dishes and includes stories and beautiful photography. Liz and Jeffrey spoke with us about the Gefilteria and the Gefilte Manifesto.
Thank you very much for speaking with us. Could you tell us first what the Gefilteria is?
Sure, yes. We're a culinary venture based in Brooklyn that reimagines Ashkenazi Jewish food. So we're particularly known for our artisanal gefilte fish, which we produce and sell around New York, and we actually ship it across the United States. And we run all sorts of dining experiences. We cater pop-up events, and we do a lot of education around Eastern European Jewish cooking.
How and when and why did you start this venture?
Well, we started cooking together in the year 2011, and we had met through working in the food world, and we both really loved Ashkenazi Jewish food. We're both of Ashkenazi heritage, and we had a really strong attachment to these foods. And what we found was that in the Jewish community, there was a lot of excitement about food, but no one was really talking about Jewish food. And when we looked at people our age, they had sort of stopped cooking traditional Jewish foods, which we felt was a real shame.
What age are we talking about?
We were in our 20s at that time, and so our peer group, we found, I always call it the falafelization of Jewish food. But, you know, we found that Israeli food had become the food that young Jews like us were cooking at home.
And really?
Yeah, we found there was somewhat of a disconnect to the foods of the Ashkenazi background. And that was troubling to us, or sad to us, because we grew up loving these foods. We grew up both outside of New York. We went to the Jewish delis and the bakeries and the appetizing shops and the dairy restaurants. And we also had these foods at home with our families. And it was around the time we got started that a friend of ours wrote a book called Save the Deli, which was all about the potential loss of this American Jewish institution. And we it was sort of a rallying cry for us. We really wanted to make sure that we didn't just preserve these foods, but we kept them alive.
Have you seen the movie Deli Man?
Of course, of course.
Yeah. You know what I miss? This is almost a, in parentheses, you know what I really, really miss having grown up on Long Island is the cornbread.
Cornbread or the corn rye?
Well, we called it cornbread. We called it Jewish cornbread.
Right.
It was heavy.
They had it at the bakery where in Long Island near where I grew up as well.
Yeah. They don't even have them anymore at the Jewish bakeries. Oh well. Okay.
there's a lot. You know, there's a lot that even now is no longer around and that hasn't quite caught on. And there are some things that never even made it from the old country, from Poland or Russia or Germany that never even made it to North America. And we're very interested in both of those, traditions. You know, what didn't make it and what made it, but then is now no longer around. And what are the things that did make it, but got a little bit, got Americanized. And we're very interested in those foods as well.
Tell us about the manifesto.
Well, so when we launched our business, we actually wrote a manifesto, just a 4-paragraph mission statement about reclaiming and revitalizing Jewish foods, starting, of course, with gefilte fish, because for us, that was really this ultimate symbol of how far Jewish these Jewish foods have come. You know, these balls stuffed into a jar in aspic that were unappetizing on the store shelves. And so we started that. You know, for us, it was sort of a rallying cry for our own generation when we wrote it. And now 5 years later, we have expanded that initial manifesto into a cookbook. And what we were hoping would really be something that would get our peers making their own pastrami's and corned beefs, baking bagels, even making their own butter and sour cream and cream cheese and schmaltz. Things that are gonna, you know, we wanted this to be a book that was gonna inspire, not just be a collection of recipes, but tell a narrative about this entire cuisine. Really connect on the emotional level to these foods, but at the end of the day, to get people into the kitchen. And so that's what the Gefilte Manifesto, the cookbook, has become.
Now, I have to ask you a question that may be not exactly a politically correct question, okay? How did you decide on a gefilte fish recipe? Because as you know, there's an age-old conflict between the sweet and the peppery.
We know it very well, and we actually have a page in our cookbook that highlights this gefilte fish line, the line in Europe that determined whether you were of the sweet gefilte fish tradition, the peppery gefilte fish tradition, or the neither tradition. So there's actually a line that you can draw on the map, and we do talk about that in the book. Generally, when we present our gefilte fish to anyone, it's one of the first questions that people ask us. Well, is it sweet? And what we spend a lot of time cooking together, but Jeffrey and I both have Polish origins. And so we like to say that we found a hedge, that it's not too sweet, but it does fall on the sweet side of the line, though we have found that our whitefish gefilte fish, our smoked whitefish gefilte fish recipe is on the more peppery and savory end. So there's kind of something for everyone. And we also encourage throughout the book, in all of our recipes, changing things and modifying them according to your taste. So make it once and then play with it. These aren't very difficult foods. Changing the sweetness level will not modify the consistency of the recipe. So we encourage changing and modifying according to what inspires you and what you like.
We actually try to incorporate into the book our own dialogue, because there's a lot of disagreements that we have about how to make things. Gefilte fish was one that we maybe did agree on, and we have a little bit of a peppery and a little bit of a sweetness in our gefilte fish that we sell commercially, at least. But we actually really love that there is a debate and this ongoing dialogue about Jewish cooking. And that's one of the most special parts of the tradition for us, you know, that there's no one answer. And, you know, we go and do a talk in a different community, and everyone's going to say, oh, you have to make your gribbenas this way. You have to make your fried chicken skins that way. And we really feel like that's sort of one way of keeping these traditions alive, as well as the ongoing arguments and debates.
When you started doing this, how did you publicize the gefilte fish or market it?
Well, we started with doing a pop-up cafe, which is something that's somewhat popular in cities across the country and really across the world, which is that we brought our concept into a space that already existed. So we went into a local cafe and brought in borscht and pickles and sauerkraut and gefilte fish, and we threw a party and sold tickets. And we also invited members of the press to this party, and this was sort of our grand opening, even though it wasn't necessarily in our own space. And this is something that that really was exciting. I mean, people wanted to come. They wanted to see what would an old world Jewish pop-up cafe look like. And so we got a lot of folks to come out, and people were really excited. They had never felt so excited about these foods before.
I mean, we had borscht, and we had rye bread and butter and pickles and sauerkraut, and we were serving beet kvass, a fermented beet drink, in addition to gefilte fish and horseradishes. It wasn't just about gefilte fish.
Who usually comes to these things, or who buys the foods? Do you have any idea who your public is? Are they mostly nostalgic Jews?
I would say it really depends on where we do an event. You know, we do events all around the country. So sometimes we were just in Boca Raton a couple weeks ago, and we definitely had an older crowd there. But, you know, in that pop-up cafe that Liz was discussing, we had, I would say, mostly people in their 20s and 30s that were there. The events are very different in terms of the gefilte fish, which we sell. I would say we really think it's very intergenerational. You know, we know a lot of older customers who buy the product and bring it home for their families. We have a lot of friends, younger friends, who buy it from their local Brooklyn wine and cheese shop and take it to their family's house for the holidays. And we have a lot of, you know, kind of young families for whom having a better sourced gefilte fish that is not made with all the fillers. We don't use carp. We don't use sort of the bottom feeding fish from the Great Lakes, which are high in heavy metals. Ours is gluten free. So really, the families that are very interested in some of those items as well. In terms of the marketing question that you would ask, I would also say, like, there's a concept that there was these young people that were just making gefilte fish was so outlandish and so crazy to the general public that we also just had people just so curious. So, you know, there's just a lot of gefilte fish, you know, for all of its faults, at least in its jarred form, it's been something of a really gathering point for people. The people like to talk about gefilte fish. There's a lot of interest in it, and we were fortunate to be connected to such an inspiring dish, I guess you could say.
Is the gefilte fish still the most popular?
Well, the gefilte fish is what we sell commercially, but the book has really changed everything for us because as we were producing gefilte fish, we were obviously making lots of other foods and doing events and building up recipes and researching for all types of Ashkenazi foods like borscht, like pickles, and like kvass and blintzes. And so now that we have the cookbook, we're finding that, sure, people are excited about making gefilte fish, but there's over 100 recipes in the book. And so people are getting really excited about our crispy chicken with simis. And people are really excited about making brisket for the first time. People love making sauerkraut. And that's just a small smattering of the kinds of things that are exciting for people. So we couldn't tell you what's the most popular at this point. We're finding that people are getting inspiration from all the different chapters in the book.
And I would just say one thing is that the approach we took with gefilte fish, which was really to kind of reintroduce it to to our own peer community, reintroduce this product that is otherwise gray and as we say in our initial manifesto, antiquated. We wanted to make something that looks beautiful, that popped, that was colorful, and at the same time went true to the roots of how to make this food. And I think we try to take that approach with a lot of our foods. And that's why we're, you know, curing pastrami and corned beef and starting from scratch. We have a whole section in the book about basically making the basics, pantry staples. So that really means people are learning not just that, you're going to dollop some sour cream on top of your borscht or on top of your blueberry soup, but here's how you make the sour cream yourself. And so that very approach we took to gefilte fish, we tried to really take to a lot of the rest of the dishes in the book.
Something that I thought was very interesting is that you started out by saying something that I didn't know, which is that people are associating Jewish cooking more with Israeli cooking. And something that's sort of a pet peeve of my own is that Ashkenazi food has a very bad reputation in Israel. I mean, they talk about washed chicken. They think that Ashkenazi people eat is like boiled chicken with nothing, I think.
We have a quote in the book by Jane Ziegelman from one of her books, which is just about, 100 years ago, if you told people that Ashkenazi food was flavorless, that you would have been considered ridiculous, because it was known even in New York by other immigrants as a food filled with garlicky, sour and strong and sweet flavors that you would never say was flavorless. And so the idea that these foods don't have flavor is preposterous. So we completely agree with you, and glad to know we're on the same page.
Yeah. I was wondering if your book is being distributed in Israel or if you have any kind of connection with them at all.
That's a great question. Right now, as of now, the book is not being distributed in Israel. That's something that we hope. You know, the book just came out a couple of weeks ago in the States. But we are definitely in connection with a number of food professionals in Israel. You know, we've actually been featured in Haaretz a number of times. But at the same time, we know that a couple of years ago there was this big Polish food exhibition and celebration that happened in Israel and was quite popular. There's actually an artist who's been making these gefilte fish shaped keychains and other art objects and has been selling them. We know that they've been immensely popular there. And I've also, having lived there about 8 years ago, I had seen a resurgence in Yiddish. So I think that it's starting to change, and there's an interest in the sort of more Central and Eastern European Jewish legacy, which sort of got watered down, I think. But in general, for sure. I mean, my father, I remember coming to Tel Aviv, and he just wanted to find a deli, and he just couldn't find one anywhere in Israel, which, of course, makes sense because it's a very American Jewish institution. The only place really that I knew to get good Jewish cooking, or the way that I was familiar with it from home, was to go to my great aunt's house, who was from Poland and who lived in Ramat Gan, and she was making kreplach and making all of these foods. So that was sort of the best kept secret. The best Jewish restaurants in Israel are in people's homes.
You mentioned on your website a Jewish food renaissance, and with more and more traditional Jewish delis closing, has Ashkenazi Jewish food become gourmet and exclusive?
You know, things like this happen over time. So when we first started, the first thing that we saw were people opening new delis and young people getting excited about deli as an institution again. And the thing about these delis is that they're for everybody. They're not just for Jews. They were hip and they were trendy because they were made by young people who were in touch with the trends of the day. And what we're seeing now is a slow growth in other types of Jewish restaurants. So places that sell smoked fish and places that meld together, you know, both Ashkenazi and more Middle Eastern Jewish foods, at least in New York, that's something that we're seeing. But these are all in the restaurant sphere. And while they're very popular, you know, only so many people can open up restaurants. But what I will say is among Jewish chefs, there's a real excitement and interest in re-exploring roots. And we just did a meal in San Diego, which is, you know, certainly not a center of traditional Jewish cooking, with a chef there. And he, you know, he has Belarusian roots and hadn't had a lot of experience with his family's traditional foods. And when he had the opportunity to cook with us, he was just so delighted to learn more about his family's traditions. And he had never cooked these foods before. So I do think among chefs, There's a great deal of interest in re-exploring roots, no matter what tradition you come from. And certainly we're seeing that among Jewish chefs in particular.
You say you do workshops. Where do you do these? Do you do them for organizations like JCCs or for individuals? And who comes to them?
We do workshops, I guess, for different communities. We definitely do some for some synagogues and JCCs, and we're doing a number of those for a book tour. You know, sometimes we'll do a pickle, how to make your own pickles, or we'll do a curd to crepe blintz workshop, making the cheese that is going to go into your cheese blintz and learning to kind of think about blintzes in a very different kind of way. We also when we were out in San Diego, we did a number of farm-to-table cocktail workshops on a farm. And we had a lot of young people, you know, in their 20s learning to make cocktails with an Ashkenazi flavor with herbs and fruits that are harvested straight from the fields. We also have done a lot of workshops in private homes and workshops for organizations that aren't Jewish. And I think that's one of the nice things that we get to do is get to bring a lot of these more Jewish foods to a non-Jewish context. And to really, for us, and again, we always think a lot about, you know, how our own generation perceives these foods. When you take them outside of that Jewish sphere, you also get some recognition from the outside world that this is a cuisine that has merit and has value. And so we really love getting to go and do events and workshops for the general public.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
Well, you know, one thing I would just say is, you know, I think we really like to think about Ashkenazi cuisine as just that, as a cuisine. And I think often with you know, Eastern European Jewish foods and Jewish cooking, it's so much about the individual dishes, right? It's usually just about the brisket, and it's usually just about the challah and the chicken soup and maybe the matzah balls. And we think of that as those are the greatest hits of Jewish cooking. But we like to think as a cuisine, you know, most cuisines around the world have a wisdom to them. You know, in Japan, you know, you always eat wasabi with your sushi, and wasabi has antimicrobial properties that will ward off any potential bacteria that might be in the fish. And we always like to think of that as the gefilte fish and the horseradish as sort of our own wasabi and sushi. It's just it's a wisdom that's built into the tradition. And when we in our whole pickle chapter, we talk a lot about lacto fermented pickles, which are probiotic live cultured foods that actually help you digest the very fatty pastrami sandwich you would eat your pickle with. And so we like to think that there is a wisdom and there's an order and there's a seasonality built into the tradition that doesn't always get recognized. And so a lot of what the book for us is a way of rethinking about this food tradition.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.